bassist and band leader Ron Carter with All Blues, Joe Henderson on tenor sax, Sir Roland Hanna on piano, Billy Cobham on drums. This is the title track of Carter's 1973 album. See how far back I went for you? Said all the way back to 1973. But good music is good music whenever it's made. With this sound, or these sounds, I welcome you. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And we're continuing from where we left off with each other yesterday, talking about, guess what? The coronavirus. Yes. Surprisingly, we're talking about it. Talking some more about it. And you may want to ask, well, why are we talking about it from a kind of experiential point of view? People have, you know, these very, very enlightened guests. They know a lot of science and all of that. Well, that is important too. But I always go for the human factor, not that experts aren't humans. But I like the idea of trying to find out how any major event or issue is impacting regular people. How are they interpreting things? How are they coping with things? How do they understand things? Because in the end, that's the substance of cause and effect. We have major causes, and it's one thing to get an explanation of, you know, the science of it all. It's quite another thing to engage people in talking about it from their own perspective. There's no right or no wrong as such, but we try to figure out how you're grappling with it, how you're coping with it. How do you understand a major issue or event? So we continue today. And we start with Donald Trump congratulating himself, what else, about his genius and how great he's performing. He's doing a great job. And he actually said this. I know even the thickest person would have checked himself and said, that doesn't sound smart. But he was quite proud when he said that if the deaths associated with the coronavirus in the United States were to even reach 100,000, he would consider himself as having done an excellent job. Even if it were to reach 100,000, and he use that figure to suggest that in the scheme of things, it's really not a high figure, considering the enormity of this tragedy. But if it were to reach 100,000 people dead, that is a mark in his head of a job well done, because obviously it could have been 1 million, 10 million, but under his superb direction, it may reach 100,000. And if it does, it will be testimony to his prowess as a leader. It would reflect such a good job that he has done to bring it down to only 100,000 people. Now, okay, you get it, you get it. So today, what we're talking about is context. Everything has a context, really. Every news story that you read, every major event that occurs, the one thing we look for is context. Because it puts things in perspective. And we are able, when we place things into context, we can do comparative analysis by that time. We can see, well, compared to similar situations, how does this situation compare? Are we better off, or is this situation worse than? It doesn't solve the problem, but it does give us a way to gauge the severity of things or the consequence of things. Context. But today, we will get to that context by discussing something I have not heard anywhere. It's a very simple thing. How did we learn of the coronavirus? How did we learn of it? And do you recall at the time how you processed that information? What questions did it raise in your head? Did it answer any of your questions? Did it put you on extreme alert? What was the agency of the information? Did you learn of it through television, through radio, through newspaper reports? How did the information reach you? And once it reached you, how did you process it? Do you recall that? That's very important, believe it or not. Because the moment you encounter a dramatic change in scenery, a dramatic change in your life, for the most part, you remember that. And there's a reason why. We'll talk about that today at 888-874-4888. How did you learn about the coronavirus and the damage it has done or did do up until the point that you learned about it? What were you thinking? How did it shape your attitudes and your mind? What did you believe that you needed to do next? Did you believe that you could do anything about it? Did you dismiss it as yet another major disaster coming out of the third world? But of course, that's not it. But do you remember your frame of mind when you first learned about it? And what did it trigger within you in terms of, well, what do you do? Can you do anything about it? Do you have to wait to see what is coming down the pike in terms of orders from on high? What are they going to tell you to do? Are they going to be able to solve this? Is this a solvable thing? Or is this a thing that has its own life? Did it, at that time that you learned about it, would you say it was more powerful? Did you consider it more powerful than the country that it originated in, and or other countries, or our capacity to do anything about it? Did you feel a sense that, well, it's bad, but we will get over this? Or did you feel a sense of foreboding that these kinds of calamities just don't seem to stop? And here you are in your space, wherever you are, and something far away, happening far away from you, is nonetheless having such inordinate impact on your life. How does that make you feel? What are you thinking about what's next for you and your family and your loved ones? So today, if you can give us the privilege of going back in time, it's not too far back in time, when you recall getting the news and the impact of the news, how you got it, what it did to you, what you thought then, and where you are now with the same news. 888-874-4888. Now, it may seem a little bit odd when people ask you a question like that. Well, it's happened already. It's done. It's happened already. But it isn't done. Ed from Los Angeles, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrice. Yeah, I first heard about this on the news, and I took it seriously because of how fast it was spreading. But I wasn't worried about it for me, because I've listened to Gary Noll for 16 years, and he had a webinar that I took, and boosting my immune system I've been doing for years, and I'm a vegan. So that's when I had heard about it. But for me, particularly and personally, it has hit home. My father is currently now in the hospital with coronavirus. He's 83 years old. I know the protocol to give him to get him well again, but I can't get in the hospital. It's very frustrating for me because of the medical industrial complex and their pharmacologically based solutions. And also I'm angry about the fact that we were unprepared for this. And part of it was Trump's trade war that made us unprepared for this, since China has a surplus of masks and ventilators.
Well, do you remember your instant reaction to the news? And how did you get the news?
It was here, Channel 5, and I saw that a L.A. County health inspector was on, and she got on and talked about the seriousness of it and how it was spreading and stuff. There wasn't any shelter in place yet. There was just, serious wash your hands, things of that nature. I didn't quite take it as seriously until they started doing the shelter in place, and then I really started taking it seriously. Because we've seen outbreaks before, Ebola, the bird flu, we've seen other things, but never quite like this that would destabilize an entire way of life. So initially I didn't take it too seriously, but then, like I said, when the health department came on and they were starting to give daily briefings about how fast this was spreading, and then the shelter-in-place order is when I really took it seriously.
All right. Are you angry?
Yes. I'm very angry. I'm very angry about the unpreparedness. I'm angry on two fronts. I'm angry that we don't have universal health care. I'm angry that we have a homeless population. We shouldn't have any homeless with all the money that we give to the banks. I'm angry, again, that people like Gary Noll, who do good work, who could save lives, is kept out of the picture because of the medical industrial complex, and people like my dad may have to be sacrificed because of the medical industrial complex and the for-profit system that both parties have been on the dole from. So yes, I'm very angry.
Okay.
Thanks well, very much for taking my call. I appreciate
in
it.
In one fell swoop, you covered a lot of ground. You talked about a sudden realization of how helpless, in a way, that we are. Something hits, and there's nothing we can do. And the same goes for the country. It seems as if the country is unable to respond the way any country, modern day country, especially one that has been pegged as one of the leading countries of the world, a major thing happens that will have immediate repercussions in the United States. And we don't seem to have things in place that could give us a feeling of safety, a little bit of safety, a cushion of time. So you're all out there by yourself, and you're now figuring what you personally have to do, because you're not seeing action from the government. You're getting reports from television and people who supposedly are authorities in this area of communicable diseases, but you're not getting the sense that you're safe.
The only thing that makes me safe is what I do to boost my immune system and my personal hygiene and everything that Gary Null has and Richard Gale have brought about to very relevant and valuable stuff. That's how I feel empowered.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for taking us into your journey. And
thank
where
you
are you now with everything?
My father is still in the hospital back east in Massachusetts. He also has dementia, which is a problem. So when they feed him, he aspirates his food. I can't see him. I'm in shelter in place out here. No one's allowed to see him in the hospital. So I'm doing great myself. I was actually in the middle of exercise when I heard your program, and I had to call and share my story.
Well, thank you for sharing it. We appreciate your call. 888-874-4888. Now, what we heard has no connection. It doesn't resemble in any way the sequence of events that we get from regular news. You know, something happened, people report it, end of story. But then you get an appreciation of the impact of things on individual lives. And that's the story. The story isn't just, well, a major catastrophe has occurred far away in a place called Wuhan, China. But we're hearing right away the impact it's having on a family and on an individual of that family. You see, this is real reporting. What he just said, Ed, was as genuine and as valuable as an account that you can get. But it doesn't sound like news, does it? This is really what happens on the ground when you hear reports of news reports. It is usually not linked with individual accounts and individual suffering. 888-874-4888. What do you recall of the moment that you learned about this virus? What thoughts ran through your head? What were your priorities immediately? And do you believe that there has been a sufficiently cogent response by the government and by communities. All ground, we have to look at these things. Do you think there's been enough of a response to indicate that we understand, even if others don't, we understand how things ought to work, and we understand what should be in place, but very often is not in place. And it further creates a problem, because on top of the tragedy, you have very little information on what to do. You don't know what to do. You don't know what this is. You don't know how to protect yourself, your neighborhood, your loved ones against it. You're just out there. And suddenly it dawns on you that you are one person. You're alone, trying to make sense of something completely incomprehensible. And still people are holding you responsible for your actions. What are you supposed to do and be? You're not supposed to be angry. The government is behind you. But we have a president who says, well, here's my barometer. If we only have 100,000 dead, I would consider it a job well done. I would consider myself as having done a good job, because it very well could have been in the millions. He's saying that even now. Nobody has a gauge yet on how this virus is actually impacting our entire country, as well as other countries. He is already lifting himself up, praising himself, saying, yeah, it's bad. It's kind of bad. I agree, it's kind of bad. But even if we had only 100,000 people dead, I would consider myself as having done a great job, because it could very well have been exponentially worse. How about that? How about that? So I go back to the question again, and those of you who might not, just a few people weren't able to get in yesterday, you certainly can call in today and talk about your side of the story. Yesterday we talked about the virus, of course, and we talked about how it is impacting us. Let's see from Khalil from South Carolina today how this is hitting him. How you doing?
It's a little treacherous here, to be honest.
Wow.
The county that I live in was the first case of this in the whole state, and the governor, I'm going to answer your question, but I want to explain. And the governor was very slow in taking protective measures. You know, he didn't shut down the schools early enough. You know, just a lot of missteps, because he was following the president's lead, which he often does. So the question, there's a lot. I like what the first caller had to say. But, you know, first of all, this should be a wake-up call to all of us as to why we should have medical care. That's just, it shouldn't even be a question. And what is viewed as the leader of the Western world. Because no matter how many gated communities people live in, we don't live in a bubble. Those people want those dollar hamburgers. So they're going to continue to get this takeout fast food from people who don't have health care. It's really not that complicated. Am I making any sense here?
I'm listening. I'm listening to you.
Okay, that's just one thing to you know, piggyback on the first caller. It's really, I mean, we don't have enough tests. We cannot even track this thing. Now, I first heard about it on, I guess it was national news, when it was spreading through Wuhan, and they were welding people's doors shut. And because China can be a very closed society at times, it has to be much, I'm thinking it's much worse than they are letting on, because they have a sense of pride. And then, you know, the president did the right thing by shutting off the flights from China. However, research indicates that people who came off of a boat that was on the West Coast, a cruise ship, they were shuttled, people who were cronies, and family cronies, they were shuttled to California. And that's where the outbreak started, in California. Now, I don't know if that was related to Washington State, but this virus is so transmissible, where all you have to do is be in the same space with someone. They don't even have to sneeze. This is just coming from the experts. And what we hear of is droplets. That's what droplets are. It's not like when someone sneezes and you're physically wet or moist from the aerosol coming from when they sneeze. No, droplets are every time we exhale. We inhale, we exhale. There are microbes in our breath. You know, just like you can smell someone's halitosis, those are germs.
Now, how did you feel at the moment you learned of this catastrophe?
In China or in the United States?
Either one.
Okay. Well, in China, it was frightening. You know, it was worrisome, because when you hear they're shutting down a whole city of tens of millions of people, and Wuhan is a large area. And then, of course, you know, it was only going to be a matter of time before it came over here. And then when it did land on the continental United States, you know, that should have been an alarm. And then we have our leader playing it down, saying it was a hoax by the Democrats. And this is exactly why we should not have a learning disabled, mentally ill president. This is why there's a book called, A Duty to Warn, or The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump. People have already started overtaking medication because they've been listening to him and dying.
So what do you think is a very useful thing to do or to have at this time in the interest of self-preservation and the preservation of families and communities?
Good information, bleach, soap, and supremely hygienic practices. Wash your hands frequently. If you think you wash your hands enough, you haven't. This is a dangerous thing. And what makes this really dangerous is that this is a novel virus, and that's just a word, but it means a lot. That means that humans don't have any immunity to this, or most people don't. I won't say all, because that's just too big of a number. But a novel virus means that each individual, there's a chance that they can mutate into something else once they get it. This is frightening.
Are you angry?
Yeah, I'm angry. This could have been handled better, of course. Now look, this is what happens when you have incompetent people in charge. This could have been handled very differently. Even New Orleans, I believe that New Orleans said if they had better guidance from the federal government that they would have called off Mardi Gras. And that could be a cop-out, but it's an argument. Are you angry? I'm not going to be personal. I know it's your show, but I'm just curious.
Oh, I'm beyond angry. I went beyond angry quite a while ago. There is simply no reason for it. And the truth of it, we still don't know. We don't know what this is. I mean, they're calling it a virus, okay. But is it just a virus? Is it something else?
We don't know.
Is this some kind of a test to see how, for example, I'm just going to throw the phrase out there, is this germ warfare? Or is this germ warfare went, you know, gone bad? That they were preparing something and it got out of hand?
I don't think that is outside of the realm of possibility. And I think that what you just said, and economics, I think they can work together. Because, you know, many people now have access to what's called a CRISPR. And that's something you can almost do at home if you have a transfer chamber. And you can manipulate DNA structures of cells at home, almost. And what if you have a group of people who already have a vaccine, they're already immune to this? And we know that there's a large number of people around, not just in the United States, but they feel like there's just too many people on the planet.
I don't believe that we are being told the truth about this. I believe that a cover-up, specifically by China, was in play.
Mm-hmm.
And then, well, of course, they couldn't contain it. At some point, it was just beyond them to contain it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think we know the truth, including from the United States. We don't know what's going on. We have no idea. People are telling us and giving us answers to questions that we're not asking. We're not asking, you know, we imagine somebody has a recommendation as to what we would do in terms of management of people in a situation like this, but we don't know what this is. I have no faith in what this government is saying about what this is, or any other government saying, what is this? What is this thing that we're experiencing? How did it come about, just kind of suddenly fell out of the sky and the whole world is upside down? No, there's a lot more information that needs to be provided, which I doubt we will be provided. But this is not, in my view,
mm-hmm.
I don't believe it to be simply a virus, a really awful, vicious virus, but I believe there's something else going on here.
Do you think there's some nefarious intent behind this?
Yes. I think something was being developed as a weapon. People have enough bombs. They got more than enough bombs to kill the people on the face of this planet 400 times over. So they have that kind of equipment. They have conventional war type equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this puts us right on the cusp of the next level of warfare, the next level of state security, the ability to cause an invisible annihilation. Nobody knows what it is. They don't know how to deal with it, how to cure it, how to prevent it. They know nothing about it. And it just appeared. Boom, there it is. Deal with it.
It doesn't add up, does it?
No, it does not add up to me. I believe there's a lot more to learn. I believe that governments, practically all of them, know something that they cannot, for whatever reason, they can't bring themselves to telling us what the truth is. And we're all biding time. We're all playing with people's lives. We're all going through this ritual as if we are responding to something that we know. We don't know. And our response no matter what they say, would be kind of inadequate. There'd be massive loss of life.
Does it concern you that even the administration spokespeople now are talking about fatality numbers that are just astronomical?
Not only does it concern me that they're talking about that, I talked about the tone, the self-congratulating tone of Donald Trump saying, even if 100,000 people were to die, I consider this, our response to this, a success, a great success. How do you link those two things together in the same sentence?
Well, if you were a stable genius, you would be able to figure that out.
Stable genius, yes. But it tells you something. It tells you something. There is much more to learn, and we shouldn't be satisfied yet with what has been shared with us as the public so far. Thanks, Khalil, for your call today. Thanks for your contribution. Gwen, we're in trouble.
Hello. Hello, you three.
Hello, Gwen.
I don't know how far back, I don't know how far back my memory, my brain will go, but I'm gonna try to tell you. I remember hearing about it on the news, you know, like the 6:30 news, and then I was getting concerned about it. But I think that what my concern was actually curiosity too, and I kind of have a different take on it. The way that I was seeing it was, geez, we have this thing in our country called the Axis of Evil, and it's pretty interesting who was getting hit with this thing. It was China. And then it was Iran getting really hit hard, and very, very early on in the disease, several people in the presidential cabinet of Iran were getting sick and dying. And then it was Korea. So it wasn't North Korea, but it was, I guess it was more in South Korea. But, you know, in my head I'm thinking, well, you know, maybe they didn't know how to aim straight. But I kind of feel that we had something to do with this because of who it hit and the timing of it, and who benefits from these hits. I mean, there are two countries that benefit from taking down Iran, and that's ourselves and Israel. You know, just keeps them in check. This was probably a way of getting China to go along with the agreement that they did capitulate to. I believe in February there was a trade agreement or that we wanted them to yield to, and soon after the virus started, they did yield to it. And I don't really have an answer for Italy, but this was what my thoughts were at the beginning. And then I was at my parents' house in Cape May, New Jersey, which is, you know, it's a beautiful seashore kind of resort, and it's really Trumpville. There's a lot of people that love Trump there. It's a very, very hugely Republican place. My parents are not, but, you know, it is. And I remember on the 15th of March, because I went down to see my mother, and the reason I went to see my mom, honestly, is because she called me on the phone. My mom is 93, and my dad's 97. And she called me around the 9th of March, and she told me she didn't feel good. She said, I have body aches, and my eyes feel like I have sand in them. So I said, okay, I'll come down. And I went down. Now, I got them organized, and she started to feel better, but now we were really having like a real lockdown. The announcement was made in New York that New York was going to be locked down. And I had a friend of mine call me from New York and said, but even though this is, you know, a lockdown, we have a, you know, a bar mitzvah scheduled and it's going to go on tonight. We're going to go anyway. And, you know, we're just going to go. And I said, okay, you know, I'm down here. But what I noticed in taking a walk in Cape May on the 15th was a beautiful sunny day. And it was warm out. And the biggest hotel down there is the Congress Inn. And there was a huge, huge amount of people there. It's unusual in the Northeast to have people go to the seashore at this time of year. You know, they usually go in the summertime. But it was a huge amount of people, lots and lots of people from New York. And the bars were packed because I guess 2 days from there was going to be, you know, St. Patrick's Day. So I was just taking a walk, and I picked up my friend, and we were taking a walk, and I said, you know, it's really weird. I said, nobody seems to be, like, even acknowledging that this disease is around. Like, everybody's partying and having fun. And I said, I don't want to go into that place. I said, look how packed it is. I said, those people are packed on top of each other. So I left to come home. I was kind of upset. My parents, I could not convince my parents to let me come home and bring my cats back, and I would stay with them and take care of them and ride this thing out. They didn't want, I have two cats, and they didn't want the cats. So I wasn't able to resolve that. And I tried to warn them before I left that this could happen, that, you know, if I didn't come back right away, that I wasn't going to be able to come back because, you know, I think they're going to shut down everything. And so that is what happened. And they are by themselves. They do have a nurse coming in three times a week, thank God. But they live by themselves in their own house, and pretty much they're on their own. And so I guess I've had, you know, really mixed feelings about it. And I guess what's happened to me as I was going through yesterday is that this clarification of what happens when you allow a system like capitalism to destroy your country. We let it get out of control, and we put everything up for sale. We got rid of all of our industry. And as I said yesterday, it had this been 20 years ago, those masks would have already been here, because we would have been the ones making those masks. Or 30 years ago, we would have been the ones making the masks. We wouldn't have to send away to China to get them. Everything would have already been here, because we used to be in an industrialized nation, which made our country be a much more significant and important place. But we allowed ourselves to be quashed by these snake oil salesmen that teach us and tell us that that corporations are people, and you don't really need these jobs, and it's okay to be a service country. Then we defunded the schools, so many people are so literally ignorant. They're just ignorant. They just really don't know anything. And I remember when that happened. And so I see that as this all comes to a head here, that the fact that we have no national health care puts many, many people at risk, because many people like myself have a huge deductible that you can't, before you even have your insurance kick in my case, you have to pay $1,600 out of pocket first. So a lot of people are not going to go to see the doctor when they feel bad, because they don't want to have to pay out of pocket for the enormous deductible that they're going to have to pay. And it seems kind of really cruel to me that in this time of a pandemic that anybody should have to pay for anything. I mean, for the greater good of this nation, no one should have to pay for this medical service right now. If people are reluctant to go to the medical service because they're afraid of paying out of pocket, then this thing just keeps going. But the things that have come so crystal clear to me is that we are willing to lie to ourselves. We are willing to continue to go into denial about things. Even this morning, you know, my sisters, you know, are all standing by Joe Biden. And even when I sent them, you know, this tape that I got this morning of a woman who's saying, I don't know it's true, but she made a very convincing case that she had been molested by him in 1993. And, you know, I sent that along because I want to continue to make my case that we have an opportunity in front of us to go with somebody who already laid these programs out for us. Just 3 months ago, we were calling him a lunatic and a socialist and a communist. And guess what? It turns out that he was right. The Cuba has a great medical staff who's out there helping the rest of the world. And that we do need socialized medicine. We do need Medicare for all. And right now, the chickens are coming home to roost. So for me, there's been a great deal of reflection about our economy and how it is dysfunctional, and how did we ever get talked into such a bad system. It only comes out as selfishness, I think, that everybody, you know, I've noticed this a long time ago. I live in a very poor neighborhood, and there's a lot of capitalists here, real hardcore capitalists. And the thing is, everybody always thinks they're going to get that slice of the pie. They're waiting. They're sure they're going to get their piece. They're sure that they're going to bring in the lottery one day. But that's just not how it is. Nobody who has that kind of money is ever going to get it, give it up, period. You're going to have to take it out of their hand. You're going to have to carve it up. You're going to have to break these gigantic banks up again. And, you know, people like Joe Biden and Donald Trump, these are the people that have brought us to these policies. We are sitting in front of what they produced. How do you like it? How do you think it's working out? In my opinion, it's not working.
Well, I want to thank you for contributing a series of excellent points for us to consider. But it starts small, you know. Do you believe what is going on is, in fact, all that we need to know? Is it the truth? When you, Donald Trump tells you the sun is shining, don't believe it. Go and find out for yourself. Because, you know, nothing, practically nothing that comes out of his mouth is true or sane. Thanks a lot, Gwen, for calling in today. From Chicago,
thank you.
Henry, you're on the air.
Hey, you just got it going.
Okay, you're a little low.
Oh, hold on. Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Hope you and the rest of the PRN Elite Stories listeners is being safe. I guess
thank
for
you.
Me, when I, you know, I, you know, just like everybody, you know, this was a news story that was in Wuhan about, you know, maybe 3 months ago in regards to this virus. And, you know, what I thought when it started spreading through China was, I think, you know, you had touched on this, that, you know, maybe this might be some kind of biological weapon, because I never put it past the government to, you know, kind of take out the economic competition. Then when I heard the story about the cruise liner ships that were stuck, you know, that were docked, and the passengers couldn't get off for like 21 days, and I think this was in February. That's when kind of like my antennas went up, and I was like, okay, this is crazy. You know, this might be something serious. So, you know, it was a gradual process, but then again, I thought about this because, you know, things that I think that are biological weapons, or, you know, purposes of environmental terrorism to me, stuff like AIDS, stuff like, you know, the crack epidemic, you know, normally those type of things target a particular, you know, group of people. Especially the black, you know, black people. But, you know, you notice how they backfire, because, you know, then when you start seeing AIDS started spreading, it started spreading among, you know, white gay males, which was when the alarms kind of set out. The crack epidemic, even though it has hit the black community hard, you started seeing some white people, you know, being addicted to crack, and prominent politicians being addicted to crack. So, most of the time, this stuff it backfires on folks. And I think they expected it to stay in China, but they didn't expect it to be that big over here. So I see this as a backfire of a biological weapon that they plan to use on, you know, the Chinese people.
Well, India too. You had so many. The virus was rampant in parts of India. And as we know, people talk all the time, oh, is there too many people there? So it's time for culling the herd.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, there is something I think we will learn further down the line that we have not been told everything we need to know. We haven't.
Mm-hmm.
Because look at how much money people are making, and the kind of people who always have wanted goodies from governments.
Mm-hmm.
They're making a lot of money.
Yeah.
So it actually feeds into the alleged plan to create a scenario in which you have a major virus And then you have to have all these things in place. And then people start getting contracts to make them. So there's a synergy of effort.
Yeah. And I think, too, the overarching theme that the previous callers and you had mentioned on was, you know, the inability of the top leadership to organize some kind of effort to stop this because of the fact that, you know, when it started really hitting home, when, you know, like in particular when Illinois did the stay-at-home order, you know, we started getting these different dates about when the schools was going to open up or reopen up. So, like, initially we had the 31st of March, which, yeah, that's been pushed back. We had Chicago Public Schools, you know, then they changed their date to April 20th. And then next door to Indiana, they said that they were shutting down their schools till May 1st. So, you know, my thing was, and then I was hearing about school districts in Texas who didn't shut down until, like, the previous week of the lockdown. So, you know, I was wondering, like, you know, we have a Secretary of Education. Why didn't she get up and say, listen, all schools will be shut down at this particular date? None of this, you know, random, this school district has this date, this school district has that date. No, there should be a unified call from leadership saying, we are shutting down the schools. Everybody shuts down. Not one school is open because of this pandemic. And we did not hear that.
Uh-huh. Thanks, Henry, for your call today. Thanks for contributing. Leonor from North Carolina, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrecht. I've listened to your show quite... Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. I've listened to your show, and this is the first time I was compelled to call. I want to answer some of your questions. So I first heard about this pandemic through a friend of mine, actually, who works in Washington, D.C. She works for the federal government. And it was fascinating that over a month ago, there were protocols in place for federal workers way back in the beginning of February that if they got sick, they were not permitted to come back to work. And it was a very strange protocol that happened, and it actually happened to her. And at the time, she had a sinus infection, and her supervisor had told her she couldn't come back. And so she had mentioned to me something about this virus that was going on in China because the federal workers were kind of aware of this. And so I did a little bit of digging and lo and behold found out that in Wuhan that there was this huge number of people who had come down sick. I have some background in public health. I had a part of my career I spent in public health research and in public health administration, and I thought it very odd that an epidemic would start and there would be hundreds of cases all of a sudden at one time. That is just not typical spread of any contagious virus. And so my antenna started going up with regards to being very suspicious about the virus. And also I had in my mind, because if federal workers in D.C. were getting these new protocols set in place, there was something coming down the pike. Then the first place that I had heard that had closed was Harvard University, and I thought that was very odd. And it was, I don't know if it was on national news because I don't watch corporate news very often, but I thought it was very strange that such a prestigious college, and this was after the Iranian leadership had come down with the virus, and there were some Koreans that were identified in our local news, and then Harvard suddenly closed. And I thought, yes, this is something that is absolutely going to spread because Harvard University has a population of students and faculty that travel the world and travel all over. And if they are closing school, then there is something definitely coming. So I knew, I suspected something was coming, and I also knew that our government would not be able to respond. Having followed the termination of the pandemic department over 3 years ago by the current occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, I knew there would be no way that we could respond effectively. I personally work as a sign language interpreter, and so I'm classified as an essential service. So recently I've had to go into doctor's offices to provide communication access to sick people in the deaf community, and it was very strange to see here in North Carolina on doctors' doors flyers that were posted that said things like, if you have a fever, if you have a cold, or if you're sniffling, do not enter this building. And I thought, holy cow, what a conflict of medical ethics, that you're supposed to treat people, not send them away, and not and literally tell them that they couldn't enter office space. And to walk in and then to see that medical personnel did not have the protective gear that they needed really, really is still disturbing for me. And it puts me too in a serious ethical dilemma that, you know, if I get called in to provide communication access to a person who is deaf, who is deaf and unable to use like video remote interpreting or some other technology. So what is my personal risk? And I have to now
make a decision. You'll have to leave it there, I'm afraid.
Yep.
Certainly, if you wish, you can call back tomorrow and finish it off, but we are out of time, sadly to say. Thank you all for your sincere effort to help us understand things. And this is what we have to do. We have to talk among ourselves and encourage, through our talk, encourage people to think and rethink things that we are told. Here are the facts. No, don't accept that. Let's talk it through, and you'll see very often there are wide gaps that have been left open that we can only fill by talking with each other. Thank you so much for calling in today, and we'll hook up again tomorrow. More talking. Bye-bye.